S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that's more Big Mac than Big Macro. I'm Andrew Page, and with me is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Phils. I like a large plain sundae as well.
Would you as well?
I would like a large plain sundae. They're my favourite McDonald's food.
Is it?
Food in inverted commas.
I picked you as a McDonald's salad guy. I totally didn't. On the podcast today, what the hell are we talking
about? I'm pretty sure that's a crack at my size.
Mate, I don't think anyone buys the salad at Mac, to be fair.
What are we talking about?
Well, we're going to talk about macro.
What is macro? Big Mac, bro.
See, So, in fact, we're going to muse on macro because macro is this, from an economic standpoint...
It's about like the food, right? The macro kind of biotic diet.
I'm trying to explain it, okay. Mr. Phillips. It is talking about the very large, the big picture.
The macroeconomic.
The macroeconomic landscape. Is it something that matters to investors? And what are the kinds of things that you need to look about?
Okay.
We're also going to talk a little bit about GetSwift.
Oh, no.
And I know you don't want to, but I want to really badly. GetSwift is a software company that does some logistic tracking software. They have gotten a whole bunch of attention, and things have gone sort of from great to not so great quickly.
I should never let you do the intros. This is the problem.
I set the scene.
Now we're going to talk about GetSwift.
Well, if last week's any guide and weeks before that, we'll say what we're going to talk about and then we'll forget half of it anyway. So you never know. You never know your luck.
I live in hope.
We're going to talk a bit about buy, hold, and sell.
Yes, this is my one because last week you tried to say something was a hold and a speculative buy at the same time.
I was hoping you'd forget about that.
No. I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And
it's your turn to get on that poor old nag with a broken back.
So really, the second half of the episode is going to be much better than the first half.
We'll let the audience be the judge of that. So my friend, macro.
Yes.
Macro. Describe
it's what. Never going to be a war cry, you know.
What is macroeconomics?
Macroeconomics is everything.
What a way to start a podcast. This is going to be a good one.
I'm going to make it interesting despite your limits.
Okay.
This is my challenge for today.
Okay.
You've set me up beautifully. In fact, I'm going to make. You know why this is particularly impressive? Because I'm asleep right now. As this goes to where I'm asleep in the United States somewhere. So we've pre-recorded this. Fair warning. If you don't want to listen to the macro, feel free to skip ahead because it was Andrew's idea and the rest of the podcast is much better.
Because the boss is away, the rest of us are at the pub as well. So just so you know.
Something like that. All right. So here's the thing. The macroeconomic situation, if I can call it that, it's the settings. It's a landscape. It's the conditions under which everything else happens.
Unemployment, inflation,
wages,
interest rates.
Yeah, Australian dollar.
Sounds important.
It's kind of important.
It is important.
Foreign trade.
Yeah.
Overseas, consumption. Think about the US or the European economies, for example.
Yeah.
It is the settings. It's the landscape. It's the background of whatever happens in the physical world when it comes to the economy. And in particular, for the companies that we might invest in on the ASX or elsewhere, the macroeconomic situation is what informs and allows companies to either make profits or not.
So if the companies are the furry little critters, the macro environment is the forest. No?
Link, we edit that out later.
Yeah, like, actually, please.
That's a terrible analogy.
Let's get rid of that.
Yeah.
So it sounds important. It sounds really important.
And it is.
It is important. So
well, it's important over the very, very long term.
Okay. Well, aren't we long-term investors?
We are.
Okay, so it's important. So
this is your topic, dude. Don't try and make me answer all the questions.
It's easier that way. I'm the big picture guy. You do the details.
So
I guess first of all, paint me a very quick picture of where we are at macro wise now.
Oh man, that is the $64 question, right? Because we talked last week about PEs, and we talked about the fact that I get another compliment because I'm a nice guy. I'm in a better mood today.
Yeah,
see, because I'm asleep in America right now, I'm in a much better mood.
Okay,
you should
go to America more often.
I'm pretty sure you mean that. So here's the thing.
Okay.
Any analysis of the macroeconomic conditions tells where we've been. Inflation, unemployment, retail spending, all that stuff is looking back. We'll get in the month of March, we'll get probably maybe January's retail sales. We'll probably get February's unemployment. We'll get late February's consumer confidence. These things are all in the past, right?
Yep.
So it tells us where we've been.
Yep.
And to some degree, macroeconomic circumstances don't change too quickly, too dramatically. So knowing where you've been gives you some sense of a broad picture of what the immediate future might look like.
Yeah.
So, frankly, we're in a pretty bloody good place. I'm really, I'll rant about this later, fair warning. I really don't understand the pessimists who want to try and paint this as a horribly bleak, terrible circumstance. Unemployment is 5.5%. Inflation is low. Interest rates are low. Foreign trade is up. The international economy is kicking along. China is doing well. The United States is
doing
well.
Could have said the same in 2007.
Europe is recovering. Yeah, could have, absolutely. And that exactly
is. And in 1999 and in 1986.
You said last week you're an optimist at heart.
I'm devil's advocate. I'm holding you to an intellectual account.
You asked me where we are, and the answer is we're in a very, very good position looking backwards.
Yep,
okay. We have absolutely nothing to complain about. Any country in the world, almost bar maybe the US these days, would give their eye teeth to be in our situation despite the negativity that goes on.
Okay. So, that's where we are now. What is your outlook for the future?
Oh, mate. Well, so
it matters, right?
Well, it doesn't really, and this is the thing, right? So, I think it's Phil Lynch. Was it Lynch? Might have been Phil.
I don't know. What are you going to say?
Phil Fisher, Peter Lynch.
Okay.
Who said that if you spend 15 minutes thinking about the macro economy, you've wasted at least 12 minutes.
Okay.
And so, frankly, from my investing perspective, I spend very, very, very little time thinking about the macro world, and much more time thinking about the companies themselves, because it just isn't that much that you should and could take from the macro, A, because it won't impact you too much, and B, because even if you did, trying to guess when the next recession is, how big it's going to be, how long it's going to last, how much trouble it's going to cause, we can't know those things. And so if you knew them with perfect foresight, then yes, of course you take them into account.
Yeah.
If I knew that the tourism numbers in Australia in 2023, I might do something very, very different. If I knew the recession was coming on the 5th of February 2019, I'm going to do something very different the day before that. But I don't know these things. You can't know these things. Mm-hmm. And so that's exactly why, frankly, time spent wasted on the macro is literally time spent wasted.
I think that's a lot of truth to that. So when you're investing and you're buying individual companies, you want really, really solid companies. You don't want the kind of companies that are just sort of the fair weather friends, the ones that only do well when everything is humming along perfectly. But as soon as there's a slight hiccup. I mean, it's that great saying that you only find out who's swimming naked when the tide goes out.
Aye.
And, you know, if you're investing in something that is only good when the sun is shining, you are playing a game of chicken, frankly. Mm-hmm. So I think when you've got a very strong company...
There's a few good metaphors side by side. You mix your metaphors beautifully
there. I like to mix it up.
The sun is shining when the headless chooks and then the tide going out. And that's a very weird farm beach scene.
So, when you have a really high quality company, when the recession comes or when the storm clouds gather, they will suffer. Yep. Absolutely they will. But the level of suffering relative is much less, and they will survive and they will bounce back bigger and better and stronger. In fact, recessions are wonderfully cleansing phenomenon for the economy. It gets rid of a lot of the dead wool. Wood. There's another.
There you go.
And often these companies emerge far stronger because there's fewer competitors to compete with. They've been able to make acquisitions when things are cheap, consolidate their positions, all of that kind of good stuff. It's fantastic.
As John Williamson would say, it takes a harsh and cruel drought to sort the weaker saplings out.
Oh, there
makes
you
room
go.
For stronger trees. Maybe that's what life's about.
Hey, you like that? I've never heard that one before.
You can use that.
I'm going to tattoo that on my back. No, I'm not.
We'll have that live on a special video edition of Motley Fool Money next week.
So, but I would say this though. We can't always agree.
Can we organise that, Liam?
No. No, please
that's
don't.
That's a shame. Okay.
I do not handle pain well, my friend. And
that's the point of the video, dude.
Let's get
it's
one of those.
Fun otherwise.
Let's get a drawer on tattoo. We can do that. So what I would say is this. I would say I'm with you, but I am a little bit
wrong.
Less laissez-faire than you.
Okay.
And the reason being is that I think it's not something that you want to obsess over. I certainly don't think it's anything you want to try and time and any of that kind of nonsense. But I think it is always something that you want to have in the back of your head. That at some things move in cycles.
Mm-hmm.
The economy certainly moves in a cycle. And I like to, as we've talked about repeatedly on this show, when you are looking at a business and trying to come up with some idea of what it's worth, you're trying to sort of forecast how it's going to earn. And I think the human mind, human nature is one where we just like to extrapolate. It's easy to do.
Yep.
And frankly, there's nothing wrong with that approach. But where a lot of otherwise very smart investors get into trouble is that they extrapolate probably seemingly conservatively, but from very high levels and not assuming any sort of wobbles. So when something comes along, and it's always unexpectedly, all of a sudden those assumptions look way off and what seemed like good value ends up being very, very highly priced. So what I'm saying is it's not to jump at shadows or to worry about, you know, be chicken little and always worrying that the sky is falling, but I think it's very smart to assume that something is going to happen and invest with that as a very distinct possibility. It is about being forearmed by being
forewarned.
Thank you.
I think that's true. Look, I You know what? Actually, I don't think that's true. I would still choose not to take that view, but I appreciate and understand and respect your view. Where I would come some way towards your view is on a company-by-company basis, where there are specific companies that are not so much immune to, not trying to guess the cycle necessarily, but if you think about a cyclical company, a company that sells building materials is a great one, right? When the housing boom on, building materials companies are going to sell a truckload of masonry. In a bust, they're going to sell nothing because no one's going to be building houses. Now, I wouldn't try and work out when or where, how big, how small those booms and busts are. What I would say, though, is if I'm buying a company, and back to the PE you talked about last week, think about how much you pay for those companies. You want to know roughly, is this a peak level of earnings, a trough level of earnings, somewhere in between?
Right.
Because you might be paying 10 times earnings, but that earnings is once in a century super high and it falls and never hits that level again, then you're paying a level, a multiple of earnings that isn't sustainable. So looking through the cycle is what I would try and do. Rather than predicting the cycle and worry about where the cycle is, I'm going to look at a company and say, all right, over the cycle, the average earnings is X, and use that as the base case when I come to my valuation.
Yeah, that's kind of what, I don't know if you're disagreeing with me there. That's kind of what I'm basically saying, is expecting that kind of stuff and then working forward from that assumption.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although I don't really care or even try and think about when that might happen. I guess I don't look at the current price and have a view on that relative to the cycle. It's more just to say on an earnings level specifically, I'm trying to work out the cyclical earnings rather than the price or the value of the market or any of that sort of stuff.
I'm very fond of quoting Mr. Howard Marks, who's one of the best investors in the world, as far as I'm concerned, and in history. And he talks a lot about sort of macro. He's a bond investor. James Bond. We've done that bit. It wasn't good.
It's
then.
Good every time.
No, I don't know.
I like it.
I think we also made something about undies in there.
Dude,
as well.
We're doing this for nothing. If I don't get some enjoyment out of it, I'm just not working.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
All right.
And he talks in this idea of the macro. He says that yes, it's important. Yes, but yes, you can't predict it. But you don't have to know where you're going. But you can get real value in knowing where you are. And what he's really saying is if you start from the standpoint that things do move in cycles, and we can see, you've just given us a whole bunch of reasons as to why things are doing really, really well right now. And we look at things such as the debt cycle. Who knows if we're at the very top, who knows if we go, but we're up there. We can look at things in such a just broad, more broadly the economic cycle. I mean, 27 years without a recession, we're up there. And you name it, and that we are riding really, really well. And generally speaking, it's going to be far harder to improve from here than it is going to get worse from here. So there's an asymmetry when you look out. For the person to expect things to get even better to any material degree and for any sustained length of time is just probabilistically a more difficult proposition than saying, look, at some stage, the economy and markets are all about a case of always going up in the long term, but it's two steps forward, it's one step backwards.
I always feel better when I'm disagreeing with you. I'm happy to continue disagreeing with you and Mr. Marks because you're exactly right about where we are right now. But anyone could have made, in fact, people were making that case right back as far as 2008. They were waiting for the double dip.
Yeah, totally.
And so.
I know what you're going to say.
All right.
So, I've already ranted on the stupidity of, moving everything wholesale to gold or going into cash. And I'm not saying that.
Yes.
But I am saying that you can structure things in a way in which you are still participating in any latent upside that there may be, but you have a fairly robust portfolio of assets that should something go wrong, you are going to be better protected than most. And so there's nothing wrong with shifting more to a more defensive stance, I would argue. I think there's certainly some value in making sure that your investments aren't all highly correlated to the one economy. So a lot of the stuff that we've done with Dividend Investor lately, we've got companies that are earning a good deal of their money offshore that happen to be in more defensive industries. Again, it's not because I think that the recession is going to arrive at one point, but should it happen, we're very well placed. And if it doesn't happen, well, actually, they're pretty decent businesses anyway, trading at attractive valuations, so we're still okay. So I think there's a subtlety there.
Mostly because I want to get the second half of this podcast and let you get on, except to say, I think that's an example of diversification, not of trying to forecast or understand the macroeconomic environment necessarily. In other words, if you're picking market-beating companies, that's the point. And you can do that and should do that right through the cycle rather than trying to work out where exactly in the cycle we are or we might be. You could have made that exact decision and picked those same companies in 2005, 2007, 2009, 2012, 2017, and been equally right, regardless of whether you had a view on the cycle or the economy or not.
Yes, but I...
I'm right again. Yeah. Let's move on.
Okay. I'll let you have that one. Oh, actually,
You can't. You can't, can you?
Okay. I'm going to. So I think one, it's come up a lot, and it's such a great example for it, is the banks.
Right.
You know, the banks are a very cyclical sector.
Yes.
Cyclical company.
Allegedly. We haven't seen much of it in the last 25 years, but we know that's
true. They are cyclical, just the cycle hasn't gone down. So the cycle has only been going up. And I think that blind... In fact, there is a very significant part of the investment community who in their working lives have not experienced a recession.
That's absolutely true.
So, you know, you can look at it and say, over the long term, banks always do well. Actually, that is true in Australia. They have always done well.
42 has actually worked through a recession.
Well, I am 43 this year, my friend, and I have never experienced a recession in my working life.
I'm 25, so that's good to know.
And so what I'm saying is, and then I've stood away from them. Now, has that done me any favors? Well, actually, they haven't really run away in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
They're not, because I think it's becoming a more pervasive view. So there's not really been any opportunity cost there. But it's also one I'm very comfortable with, because if there is any kind of wobble, these guys are going to do particularly bad, in my humble view. That is the lesson of history and the lesson of global peers and the rest of it.
Yes.
So yes, I hear what you're saying, but I've still been fully invested and we've still gone okay. It's just that we've avoided those areas that, should it have happened, we would have been much better protected. And I maintain that stance as well, because there is, as I'm fond of saying, a huge asymmetry in terms of your potential returns. We muddle along and everything stays okay. Tiny bit of upside. There's a bit of a wobble. There's a huge amount of downside. That is not an attractive bet.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
All right.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Get Swift.
Oh, God.
Now,
can we go back to the last one?
Get Swift. Let me set the scene here. A lot of people listening to this will know exactly what I'm talking about, but for those that don't, we need a little bit of a summary, a bit of a preamble. These guys are a technology company. They've got a bit of software that helps companies with their logistics. If that sounds pretty vague, well, that's about as specific as the company itself has gotten on a lot of things. Anyway, it's a company that just went from strength to strength to strength in terms of its share price. Mm-hmm. Shares just continued to go up. I don't even know what they started at. It was, I want to say, like 50 cents or something, even less. And they got to $4 plus at one stage. They announced a lot of exciting deals, but there was no detail around those deals.
Yep.
There was a huge potential. Things like Amazon were mentioned. A whole bunch of other stuff were mentioned. Mm-hmm. And the market got very, very, very excited. Then,
so these shares was 45 cents.
There you go, 45
back cents. In March last year. Got to $4.60
right
in December.
And they raised
last
some capital. They raised about $100 million at the top. They asked them, we'll sell you some more shares at this price and you give us a bunch of cash.
That's impressive.
Actually, masterstroke, frankly, right, from a Machiavellian standpoint. But when I look at the share price today, and as you said, we've pre-recorded this, and this thing is moving so fast
that
100 things may have happened since we've done this.
Yes.
Shares are now back below 50 cents.
Yes.
And there was a expose in the AFR, in the Australian Financial Review, saying basically, look, a lot of these contracts are not earning any money whatsoever. The company is wildly overvalued, et cetera, and things have. And now there's actually a class action that has been launched because they have not fully informed the market. They were in suspension.
Allegedly not fully informed the market.
Sorry, allegedly. Yeah. Shares are in suspension for a while. They've hired help in terms of like looking at their past reporting and their processes and all of that.
PricewaterhouseCoopers have been called in to audit the company.
And to me, it is a fascinating story because there is lessons to be had. And I'll get into those reasons in a moment, but you seem to roll your eyes when GetSwift is mentioned.
I just, you know, I've got to say, I really struggle. This is a corporate soap opera of sorts. I think the whole focus on it is a waste of time, effort, money, energy, when we frankly could be going doing much more important things, finding the next winners of tomorrow, looking for bigger, better ideas, not getting distracted by what kind of has become a bit of a soap opera, a bit of a core celeb amongst a few of us. We get way, way, way overexcited about this stuff. I think it's probably best just left alone, quite frankly.
I there's a spectrum. On one hand, it's completely ignored. At the other end, it's obsessively focused on.
Right.
And I think both are wrong. But I do think that as an investor, there are case studies that come up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm never going to be able to invest in Enron, but there's a hell of a lot as an investor I can learn from the Enron saga. Lessons that I can apply when making future investment decisions. And I think that there are lessons in terms of the Get Swift side. So you're right. You don't want to obsess. And we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on it because it is a very small cap company, very small part of the market. But this thing just got attention. It was getting regular pieces written up in the press. You look at any kind of investment forum that was out there, it was a million people pumping this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of retail,
a lot of
retail investors are going to get very, very, very burnt from all of this.
Some retail investors.
there is a lot of pain that's caused it, and I think.
I think it's a relatively small community of people. Is my broader point. I don't blow this up out of proportion. Is my concern.
It's not going to derail the economy. What's happened here? I agree with you there.
Yes.
So
but a lot of people will lose a lot of money. You're right.
Yeah, a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money. And so what went wrong here? Well, I would say that the one lesson that we can take going forward is that beware the highly promotional company.
Yep.
The company that shows you the PowerPoint presentation with the size of the market, and if only they can get 4 or 5% of that, yeah, they're going to make millions of dollars.
Now, I want to say too, very quickly to interrupt, we need to be very careful here. These are allegations made against the company that may be proven false.
Sure.
So I'm not suggesting this is necessarily an open and shut case, or these lessons are as a result of anything the company's done wrong. But from a share price perspective, from an investor perspective, the rise and fall does present some of these.
I'm going to say that they have done stuff wrong, not from a legal standpoint, but from a best practice standpoint. And as a board of a company, your job is to represent shareholders. That's what the board is there for. Mm-hmm. And what you want to do is ensure that shareholders are informed as best as possible, as much as you'd like to be informed if you're on the other side of the fence here. So all of this company has made a whole, and again, nothing, I'm not alleging anything illegal, but they're saying we've won a contract with Amazon. There's no financial detail around that. We've won a contract with that. And again, with Commonwealth Bank, and there's not a lot of, and then when things change, that is not brought to market. So as it's turned out, all this pressure has forced them to make some disclosures.
Yep.
One of them being that of all of the contracts they said they've won, half are in what they've called pre-revenue phase, which, yep, is just a fancy way of saying we're not making any money from these contracts.
And again, I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong as in illegal, improper, inappropriate, just they could have done a better job of keeping the market informed.
They have only spoken about the positive. They have not presented it in a balanced way, shape or form.
And we prefer
when,
to do that,
when
right?
People have made assumptions, they have not done anything to dissuade those assumptions. And so again, I'm not to make it about GetSwift, but when you are looking at a company, And generally, this is more often in the small cap space. And you're seeing this kind of stuff. Narratives are really important when companies are yet to make any meaningful financial headway.
Yep.
And it's important, right? I mean, every company needs a good story to attract capital, to prosecute their business strategy. I get it. But you need to, human nature is such that you are going to have a very, and greed particularly, going to have a very strong desire to believe, and I say this having succumbed to it myself, where you want to believe, because it's half true, so much money to be made.
Right.
And so there is a very, very, very good case to hold a healthy degree of skepticism. And I've mentioned to you, before, you are fond of disagreeing with me. and that's, mate, that's why
true.
I love you.
Listeners would know that.
I value that far more than anything else because it is.
Are you saying that's the best thing about me?
It is the best thing about
you. Thanks,
dude. No, well, from an investment standpoint, it is. You need people to challenge that view, and you need to challenge what the company is saying, not because you just want to be difficult, like maybe you are sometimes, but because you want to make sure that you've got your head around. Someone famous once said, and I forget who it was, you need to be able to understand and articulate the bear case far better than the bears themselves. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be investing in it. So even though you might like corporate travel management, which you waxed lyrical on last week for good reason, if I was to say, well, what could go wrong with it? You need to be able to say, well, look, the people who don't like it don't like it because of this, 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 and this.
Right.
And you need to own that and to take that extraordinarily seriously.
Right.
So I guess this is a very long-winded roundabout way of saying that when you see highly promotional companies, you know, make sure that you can get to some cold, hard facts to support your case. Make sure that you see the alternate viewpoint, because if you don't, you're going to be like many unfortunate GetSwift shareholders and you are going to get in trouble.
Very good. Mate, that's all we've got time for.
Really?
I'm sleeping at the moment in the US, so I've got to go.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, mate, a nice short and sweet one this week.
We'll be back with more next week, though.
We'll make it up by going 3 times over length next week.
If only that wasn't true.
If only it wasn't true.
All right.
Thanks very much. Remember, you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes and your favorite Android podcast app. And if you like what we're doing, please give us a five-star rating at iTunes and tell your friends. Remember, you can also go to fool.com.au/Triple M. Until next week.
Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/triple M. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.